Hello, Gemini, and welcome to the Easy Does It reading for your sign and your rising sign. That's Gemini, Gemini rising, Gemini sun. And if you know your Chiron placement, Gemini, Chiron as well. I am involved in an exercise of Easy Does It for the Easy Does It reading, running a little bit behind. Thank you for your patience and your forbearance on that. Here we are, ready to go. So I drew an oblique strategies card a moment ago, and it said, abandon normal instruments. Oblique strategies. The set looks like this. I highly recommend it. You can find it online, but I think for cards, it's good to spend the money and get the card. So the concept of abandoning normal instruments, kind of typical Eno suggestion, would suggest leaning into the minor planets. So we're going to do more of that. We can't abandon the main planets, you know, out to Neptune, but we can certainly emphasize what is going on in the new planets, the unusual planets. And the purpose of this reading originally was to account for a number of major planet changes. You know, all the gas giants change signs within a very short time. That would be Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. That is crazy. I didn't even think this was even possible. I had no idea that things could. I mean, of course, it's possible, but on a basis of how many thousands of years, and now and. Here we are, and it's happening now. So we'll get into that, and I'm going to look at the minor planets, and I'm going to place more emphasis, thanks to Brian Eno, more emphasis than I was planning on Sedna in your sign. A very unusual planet orbits the sun in 11,400 years. It's in our solar system, and it orbits in 11,400 years. And it is very close to the sun right now, comparatively, and it entered Taurus in the 60s, and then it entered Gemini last year. So it was running a little bit ahead, and that is the planet. Sedna is the planet that astrologers have associated with the global warming problem, and I'm going to continue that theme. Well, that. The concept of an environment into Gemini. And we're going to have a whole different kind of reading on Gemini than we've ever had before. And then, in addition, there have been a lot of other planetary sign changes, but the minor planets are very interesting. And we're going to talk about what those are. So I've got some entered into the chart, as is. And we're going to take a look at Serenu. .com to make sure that I have covered all of the others. Now, a brief word about how to use this series of readings. Most of you are going to have either all 12 or more than one. And if you have only purchased one and you agree with what I'm saying here, you appreciate what I'm saying, we'll send you a discount code to get additional readings. The readings work as a cycle. Each one is complete unto itself, but each one emphasizes different themes. And so one of the ways to get closer to really doing astrology is to understand how the readings relate to one another, how they interconnect with one another, because the beauty of astrology is that it is an interconnected system, and that everything relates to everything else, and that very similar charts can say very different things. So hold on while I go through my ever-increasing stack of charts. So for example, let's just take, here's the Gemini chart. You can tell it's a Gemini chart because Gemini is on the left. In astrology, that is the east. But if we look at the Taurus rising chart, it is pretty much the same chart with slightly different planets added. But Taurus is on the left. Taurus is in the east. That is the hypothetical ascendant that makes this chart work as a solar chart. And I'm going to lose this vest because it's getting in the way here. All right. All right, so much for that. I will not undress any further. Okay, so so what is it? Imagine you could change two-thirds of the meaning of a word. Imagine that every word could have its meaning altered by 66%. And you could do something with a work of literature and change the meaning of every single word in the book by two-thirds, but it's all the same words, and it's the same book. That's how this works. When you go from the Taurus chart to the Gemini chart, you keep about a third of the meaning, and you change about two-thirds of the meaning. This is the miracle of astrology, and there is a video that not enough people have seen called The Circular Language, which is me explaining to Marshall McLuhan's grandson, Andrew McLuhan, how astrology works and how every planet relates to every other planet, but then certain patterns emerge. And it is the patterns that give the context, and it is the patterns that make astrology into an art. Pretty much pattern recognition makes anything into an art form. Okay, so let's dive in. Therefore, if you hear me emphasizing a certain sign in your chart, go to that sign and hear what I have to say. I place a lot of emphasis on Aries. We've given Aries to everyone. And if you have purchased only Aries, we were going to give you Pisces. I call this the reference reading. So every one of these series has a reference reading. And for the Easy Does It series, it is Aries. And that is because there's so much going on in Aries. And I will give a complete rundown of that. In the spirit of Brian Eno, abandon ordinary instruments, the most interesting stuff is coming out of the unusual instruments, not the ordinary instruments. But using perhaps the most unusual of the ordinary instruments, that is the planet Uranus. And Uranus is in the process of entering your sign. And I'm going to just pull the laptop up here because the computer I'm on is a few operating systems too advanced to be able to handle my astrology software. Our company went out of business in 2019, and nothing even vaguely comparable has replaced it. So we're talking now about Uranus entering Gemini. That is the big news, potentially the biggest news for you of the last 10 or 20 years. That's how powerful Uranus is. Fortunately, we will get to it. It's accompanied by Sedna, which grants a sensitivity that Uranus alone does not grant. And it's very important to read the two together and to have a sense what they're about, especially based on what I'm about to tell you. So Uranus last entered Gemini right before the United States got into World War II. It was the summer of 1941, and Uranus entered Gemini on August 7th, 1941. And by December 7th, 1941, let's see, that's August, September, October, November, December, 4 months later to the day, Pearl Harbor was bombed and the United States entered World War II. It had secretly been involved in the war. It had been involved in a program called ULTRA, not MK ULTRA, but ULTRA, led by a spy master named William Stevenson. And the United States, in various different capacities, was deeply involved in not only the war against the Nazis, but also in providing American corporations, anticipating a Nazi win. had like ITT, Standard Oil, IBM, and a wide diversity of other corporations were involved with the Nazis. But then there was the political level, and the United States gets involved in the war on December 7th, 1941, just 4 months after Uranus goes into Gemini for the first time. And though it is not often touted this way, this was a computer war. The war was won by through the use of computers, particularly through Alan Turing in the United Kingdom. And so then Uranus goes back into Taurus on October 4th, 1941. It's in Taurus for the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And then May 15th, 1942, it goes back into Gemini. It's interesting. My mom was born in late May of 42, and so she has Uranus in Gemini. She's not much of a computer person, but I'm sure she's pretty good at using them. Okay, so now the thing to under and then it stays in Gemini. I promise there's a point to this. It stays in Gemini until 1949. It starts to trail out in 48, and this was the invention of computer science. Basically, the invention of computer programming, the invention of the digital computer, the invention of the software application, the invention of the mainframe, the invention of random access memory, etc., etc., the stack and the pile, and so forth. And so there are two things going on with Uranus and Gemini, and they are operating in parallel, and you are likely to be a point of intersection whether you like it or not. And I know that my viewers and readers and listeners are generally not techno geeks, you're not into computers for their own sake. You'd probably rather not have one, but we're all stuck with them. So the entry of Uranus into your sign is coming with and will come with the most rapid advance in computer technology that we've ever seen, and it's going to be 10 orders of magnitude higher than what we have experienced. And as you know, I am deep into the investigation of this thing being called AI and this company. Open AI that has created this thing called ChatGPT, which is really a front for Microsoft. You probably don't give a toss about that. And if you do, I've got plenty of stuff for you. Just go to the Planet Waves FM, planetwaves.fm website, and you'll see there's a link to our daily AI news feed, hand selected by Elizabeth Shepherd, who lives on a mountaintop in Mexico, not by a robot. And they're skimmed from the internet by another, not a robot, named Sean Boyle. Okay. So we are about to be kind of shot through the barrels of the shotgun of technological development. And it is going to be very unsettling. It is unsettling in ways that people do not understand. They simply do not grasp this. The second thing that is going on is that this astrology describes something in your personal development. We could call it an effect on you, but actually it is a point of your personal development. So it is we're now like the astrological revival starts like in the late 1800s, like in the 19th century, and it's all very table thumpy and spiritualist, and Age of Aquarius is coming in, and the New Age is being concocted as this movement. And a lot has changed since all of that was going on, since H.P. Blavatsky and Alice Bailey and all these people were kind of bringing astrology into the modern world, back into the modern world. And as I practiced the last 30 years, I take a completely different view than they have taken. I do not accept that there are conditioning forces. I don't think that there are conditioning forces. There they might be. I don't fully discount it. What I think is going on is that the chart is a picture of karma, and that the movement of the planets through the chart represent the development, unfoldment of that karma, and also a kind of a related concept called dharma, which is correct action, acting as if to hold the world together. And what is so interesting is you don't need to have the base planets. It's nice to have, you know, a chart for your own that looks like this, and everyone has one. And I think it's one of the most important things for finding yourself in the midst of very, very rapid change. But what we have, even only with the houses and signs in place, which is why I want you to get your rising sign and your Chiron sign, and I'll look it up for you personally if you write to me at efc@planetwaves.net. If you don't write to me on Thursday or Friday, though, but any other day, even having the framework in place is enough to give you information that you need. And to tell you where things are in your particular cycle. And so we've got Uranus now coming into your sign. And the chances are you were not born between 1941 and 1949, but you may have been. A lot of my readers are of that like late 70s, early 80s age group. Okay. This is here to basically rock your world. And we also know that just what Uranus does. You reinvent yourself. You personally reinvent yourself. So just to give an example from my own life, since I can absolutely vouch for that, that Uranus goes into Pisces in 2003. And it's not long after that that I closed up shop in the United States and went to Europe and became an actually world-famous astrologer working for Jonathan Kaner, became known to a global audience, many of whom still follow me. But in the background, I was transforming myself into an artist. I had completely devoted myself to photography starting in 2005 and opened up the first Book of Blue studio in Belgium, and began photographing planet waves. And I went to Europe, a modestly well-known astrologer, and I came back a very famous astrologer. But the deeper inward personal transformation involved discovering myself as an artist. And so this was a radical before and after moment. And I think there is no underestimating the before and afterness of this. And you can say, well, this is going to take place over 7 years. Some people are wondering, well, will I still even be here in 7 years? And I'm saying, you count on yourself being here in 7 years. And if you're not worried about that, we do have more important problems to worry about. But if you're not concerned about that, the thing to envision is the ability to make the changes that you need to make, or to bring out the thing inside of you that has always been there. There was one night I was working away in my studio, maybe it was 2006, about halfway through Uranus in Pisces, going over my Chiron, my Mars, my Sun, my Chiron, Mars, Sun, Mercury, my Midheaven, and many other things, right? All that stuff packed in Pisces and lighting up my entire chart, and I'm up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning working on some art project, and I just had this revelation, wow, I actually am an artist. That's actually what I am deep down at the very bottom of who I am. And I wrote to my beloved girlfriend Ginger from the 1980s, and she said, yeah, it's always been true. I always knew that. So, you know, it's kind of like the thing that everyone else always knew about you and that you knew about you that is being made manifest, that is everything else gets removed. And it can seem like radical transformations are happening, but it really is the journey back to who you are and who you always were. And with Uranus, there can be radical quantum leaps, and you are likely to be in one now. And what I would like to show you now is the aspect pattern that is not going to last for much longer. And by that, I mean it will still be in its peak in early 2026 into the spring of 2026. Let's get the aspects up here on the screen, at least on my screen. I wish I could broadcast this, but I can't. And this would be Saturn conjunct Neptune. Saturn conjunct Neptune. And then, so all through the first half of 2026, really, we're going to get a pattern like this. And the thing that will not be there, the thing that will not be there, but which is still very active for us right now, is Mars. But this pattern, and we can move it to Gemini as the ascendant, is going to hold. Now let's put this into context. So the first thing we know is that you're in this radical phase of transformation, radical phase of transformation with Uranus coming into your sign. You might say that it represents one level of change. It represents one level of personal development. The thing, however, that no one is talking about when they talk about all of this technological development, is two things they're not talking about. They are not, I don't see anyone, I see parts of the argument being made. What is this doing to children? What is this going to do to homework? What is this, people being made suicidal by this technology? Any technology that can make some people suicidal, where they cannot handle their existence based on the introduction of this technology into their lives, that's going to have a deep effect on everyone, and you bet your sweet ass that it is having one. So, but what I don't see is the total gestalt conversation of, like, what is this all about for all of us? And this is crucial for you because you are so close to the center of the cyclone. Because the cyclone in one manifestation is going to be driven by Uranus in Gemini. That is going to be really, from the standpoint of the overall technology environment and you changing and the place where the overall technology environment intersects with you, kaboom, that is Uranus in Gemini. And this, no matter what, will transform you. That's it. Now, fortunately, there is another factor that is involved. We have this planet called Sedna, which takes 11,400 years to go around the sun. If you were to, 11,400 years, Uranus is considered a slow mover at 84 years. Just 84 years. Let's just do a little quick math using the AI device known as a calculator application. Let's divide, 11,400 divided by 84. Wow. Get this. So remember, Uranus is a slow mover, and it will go around the sun 136 times for Sedna going around once. Say that again. This slow mover called Uranus will go around the sun 136 times, approximately, give or take a couple of revolutions. 136 times, for every time Sedna goes around once, Uranus is going 136 times. It would take me a few minutes just to wave my hand 136 times. And now they're meeting together in your chart. Now, here's where the work on Sedna done the past 20 years. Announcement of Sedna was 2003, if I recall. And it was a big deal at the time, in a way that there are no more big deals There are no more big deals in astrology. They just ain't. Meaning astronomy. Nobody fucking cares anymore. The astrologers don't fucking care anymore. And they have barely caught up with Chiron, which was discovered in 1977. People are still saying things like, well, I don't know, the jury's still out on Chiron. Like, okay, that's one heck of a slow jury. However, Sedna got attention. Sedna was considered an important development when it was discovered in late Taurus in 2003. Turns out it enters Taurus around 1966 or so. Don't quote me, but we're talking the mid-60s, and I like to joke that now the 60s are finally over, Sedna entered Gemini. And in a way, that is a true joke. Through the process of delineating Sedna in Taurus, and I will say that some very imaginative people did the work on Sedna, which is about the goddess of the frozen waters, the Inuit people, creation goddess of the Inuit people, whose whole lifestyle is based on basically living on a gigantic glacier. What happened was that Sedna became associated with climate change. Now, I realize this is now a very controversial issue. And whereas once it was all kind of woo-woo and you had three heads if you talked about it, now suddenly it's like a meme. And we're going to do everything based on climate change. For example, New York just passed a law, no more propane. You can no longer build a new building heated with propane. Well, the energy's got to come from somewhere, and it is not more efficient to turn propane into electricity 100 miles away and then ship it across the countryside. However, nonetheless, Sedna became associated with matters of climate, matters of the environment. But there is one environment that is not studied. We are all obsessed with glaciers and sea levels and temperatures and microplastics, but the most important environment is the mental environment, the psychic environment, the environment of all information, called the noosphere, after N-O-O-S, a Greek word basically for information. And so Teilhard de Chardin, a monk, a French monk, a very, very brilliant guy, invents this concept called the noosphere, which is the realm, the total information environment, every thought, every word written, every word spoken, everything in every computer database system, the realm of human-generated information. That is Sedna in Gemini. Noos, N-O-O-S. And what you have is not only the impact of being shot through this rapid acceleration in this information environment, but you have an environmental sensitivity to it. This can work a number of different ways. It might not thrill you to have an enhanced environmental sensitivity to what is going on in the noosphere, in the total information environment. However, it is better to, if you are sailing a boat on the open ocean, I would propose. I mean, I haven't done much open ocean sailing, but I have been out on the Long Island Sound quite a bit, and New York Harbor and the Hudson River and the East River and the Harlem River and Hell Gate and all these places in the New York area, Jamaica Bay. It's better if you know the environment. It's better if you know whether red sky at night, what that means, and what a red sky in the morning means. It's better if you understand the gale flags. In other words, the small craft advisory, one triangle, two triangle, one square with a dot, one square, two square with a dot. Gotta know what that means. More than that, you have to understand the tides. You have to understand the principle of the tides and how how sailing a ship in and among the tides makes a difference. And generally to feel the weather. You've got to feel, on a certain level, you've got to feel the weather, because the weather forecast could be totally wrong. Or it could be wrong enough that it makes a big difference. And you have to know which craft can withstand which weather condition. And I will tell you, if you think you're doing yourself a favor by reading the internet on your phone, that is not a good idea. If you said, well, I'm going to just deal with this minimally, that is like going out in a rowboat on the ocean in a storm. You need a more seaworthy vessel than a fucking cell phone to be able to make any use of the data flow that we have. It is the equivalent of it's kind of like burying your head in the sand. No, burying your body in the sand with just your nose exposed and your eyes, and you can't really turn your head. That's what it's like. Being on a cell phone and thinking you can read the internet is like this, being buried up to there. You're immobilized. You have very little ability to see what's going around you. You have almost no flexibility, almost no maneuverability, and absolutely no ability to manage the data stream. None. You cannot do it. I'm very well familiar with these advanced small devices. For the work that I do, they get the piece of shit rating. They are absolutely useless. To do the work that I do, I have 3 24-inch iMacs running, as well as a screaming hot laptop. And then I can sort of keep my shit straight. That's how I can do this for you. And this setup here is all about doing these readings. One room, that's mainly, and Planet Waves FM. So think of that as an environment, right? Think of it as an environment. And the environment does not have to be an ugly environment. It can be aesthetic. It can be beautiful. It should be, you know, designed for its purpose. You know, let's see here. On screen, camera one, video capture device. So this is a wider look at the environment. One environment, right? And notice I've got multiple cameras working to give you the right view. So you will benefit from thinking of your experience on the internet in digital space as maneuvering in an environment. And if you think you can cross the ocean in a raft, well, it's been done. But not that often. And it's very dangerous. In addition, that is, in a sense, the outer environment. Here's a nice image of crossing the ocean in a raft, only it's more like a river. That's a tarot card that says go to the astrology. So now we're using unconventional means here. I have programmed one tarot card. Come on. I have programmed one tarot card to tell me to go to the astrology. 27 Libra rising, 22 degree Leo moon, and the sun in the last degree of Leo, an unsealed letter. Okay, so the environment really is, what Sedna is really talking about is how you and everyone else but you, meaning you're the center of your reality, is being completely remade by the changes in the environment. And the changes are going to be increasingly fast and destabilizing. Increasingly fast and destabilizing. This is a message for everyone. It is coming out in the Gemini reading. That's how these readings work. Each sign emphasizes a certain angle on the story. And that story will express itself in Aries two different ways. It will express itself in Aquarius. We're going to get there. We will get there. So what I am suggesting is that the ingress of Sedna and of Uranus into Gemini profoundly affect you, and they affect you because the environment is rapidly changing. It is changing everyone around you. That's also indicated by Uranus. That is a group factor. Uranus, and every theme in your chart emphasizes groups. We're going to get there. That's how I'm going to sum up everything else. We're going to jump from Uranus in Gemini to all the other group themes. So this is a good point of departure. So Uranus represents groups. That's one of its true associations with Aquarius. There's almost always a group theme with Uranus in Gemini. Uranus anywhere. And Gemini is kind of groupy itself because there's two people. But the truth is that we're not all... Gemini gets famous for being twins, but we are all basically... quintuplets, or, you know, 12 tuplets, I don't know, that's maybe 10. So group involvement is very important, and you will be involved, you will be influenced by the collective mind. This is a very important thing to understand as a Gemini, is that there is an enhanced relationship between you and the collective mind. And we're going to see this turn up at least three different ways in your astrology coming up. And so what I am suggesting that you do is, far from, you know, attempting to isolate yourself for your own safety and your own sanity from the internet, you know, and being one of those people who, like, quickly checks email for 5 minutes and then closes it down and then, like, doesn't deal with anything because you think you're safer, forget it. It's not true. It is simply not true. You need to learn how to maneuver the appropriate vessel for the conditions of the ocean, and note that there is a gale force wind warning flying on the dock. That, I think, is two red flags, two red squares with white. No, that's a hurricane. One is gale force, one of those, and then two is a hurricane. And we're right between gale force and hurricane. Then the more I read about what's being done, the freaking crazier it gets. And it is not like we can be like, okay, there's a war in Vietnam. It doesn't really affect me that much. My uncle's there. My brother's there. Oh, wait, my boyfriend might get drafted. This is important to recognize. So you have, you're in the environment of rapid change, and you have environmental sensitivity thanks to Sedna. Uranus is going to blow through town real quick. Uranus is going to be out of here by the early 2030s. That doesn't sound like it's so quick, but compared to Sedna, which is going to be in Gemini for something like 55 years, the rest of all of our natural lives, unless you're a five-year-old watching me, you will keep the skill of the environmental sensitivity that you gain if you bother to gain the skills. And this, you know, the skills for being a sailor should certainly include how to swim. You should at least not be able to not drown. I'm not saying you've got to, like, you know, swim the 100-meter butterfly. I'm just saying that if you land in the water, you better be able to at least paddle your way back to the boat or tread water till somebody comes and gets you. Now, I brought up the theme of group, which originates with the group of Uranus being in your sign. So pay attention to group dynamics. That's reason one. Reason two is that this action in Aries, and I'm not going to be able to go into the kind of detail I want to go into on Aries in this reading, but that's why everyone's got the Aries reading, is the most seismic shift I have ever seen in the astrology, historic or contemporary, in the time that I have been studying it. And one of the things I specialize in is very unusual outer planet patterns and very unusual minor planet patterns that are associated with the major historical turning points, major historical events. The social aspect is because Aries for you lands in house number 11. I've even already circled it. It lands in house number 11. And 11, house 11 is about the group that you are with. It is about the group that surrounds you at all times. It is not the crowd at a Yankees game. Rather, it is about the essentially, in the words of Facebook, your friends and their friends. It is about the people you go to, at the people you meet at a party where you may know like six people at the party, and then you meet all these new people. Then you know you're in the 11th house. There's a zone where your private circle of friends intersects with an other circles of friends, and there is something that is productive happening. I would not include, for example, a rave or a club event as an 11th house event. But my best friend from high school, Mike Ackerman, when he was taking me out to all the new wave clubs in New York City, and I was his 17-year-old sidekick getting into all the bars, and he would leave me just to do my thing and watch the show and check out the girls. He was working behind the scenes as a soon-to-be entertainment attorney working the scene. That's part of 11th house thing. Because he knew people. And I didn't know this at the time. He wasn't talking about it. Now I've known him an extra 40 years. I figured out what he was up to. So that's an example of the 11th house. So the 11th house is when you're in a social environment and you can work it, when you can be introduced to people, when it is actually interesting. And so all of the activity going on in Aries, and there is a lot, it is impossible to sum it up. It took me an hour in the Aries reading and 6,000 words in the Aries annual edition, which if you may have that. I'm not sure how we granted access to that. But the two processes going on in Aries are, and footnote, astrology gets bonus points for being slow and being rare. And the two usually come together because slow implies rare. And so this conjunction happens about every 40 years, but it's only happened in Aries four times since 1 BC. This is the fourth time it's happening in Aries since 1 BC. And according to the Leo King, to whom I have not been able to reach out at this time, but someone showed me the chart, the last time this happened in the Aries point, it's going to be at 00 something Aries, that's one Aries, was 4500 BC, allegedly before the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx were built. That's old. That's a long time ago. So this is incredibly rare. And this is about, well, it is kind of hard to describe, but we might say that it's about a formation. It is about available resources. It is about synthesis of some kind. Synthesis means making something new, using some new process out of available elements, out of available substances, compounds, and all. It's about making something new. And so this is available. And there's a lot about the realism of Saturn and the imagination of Neptune. And we find the meeting of these two things also in a minor planet. And I was messing around yesterday on the Wikipedia page for Borsisi, said minor planet, discovered in the late 1990s by my old buddy Jane Liu and her old professor Dave Jewett, and by Chad Trujillo, who is a specialist in small rocky planets with a red spectrum. How's that for a specialized job? How long, this is one little use of AI, orbit of Borsisi. The orbit of Borsisi, 293 years, so it's a classical Kuiper object. And so imagine, Neptune, 165 years, Saturn, 29 years, Borsisi, 293 years. How many times ever do you think they've actually made a triple conjunction? An exact triple conjunction. You probably have to go back to the dinosaurs, and the computers don't go back that far. It's completely irrelevant. This is a one and done, one time only experience, particularly amplified by the Aries point. The intersection here, the first degree of Aries, which is the intersection of the individual, let's use Brian Eno Carr as a ruler, the individual and the collective, that's the Aries point right there. And so this is a node that gets you out, that gets you into another. It's a tap into the collective, but it's also a tap from the collective into you. So you think, well, besides all the ways I want to be famous on social media, and now, like, essentially everyone, including grandma, is kind of trapped in this. We are plugged into the collective in a major way, and all of our stuff is going into databases, which Ed Snowden has been warning us about since we first heard of him. That's why we heard of him, is because he's been warning us. He still hasn't left Russia yet. Still hasn't been indicted in the United States yet. Still hasn't left Russia yet. But he's warning us that everything, including this video, is being databased. This is going to sit as an unpublished YouTube video. It is as sure as shit been transcribed and entered, and Google knows every word that I'm saying. My videos only get 1,000 clicks. Why could that be? So what this gives you is resources, and resources that are available through the social realm. That is to say, through people. But this isn't like trying to navigate the internet on a phone on a like 3x6 screen is like trying to cross the ocean during a storm in a raft. Trying to navigate the social world on the internet at all is, it's ridiculous. You can obviously do some of that navigation on the internet, but my credo since the beginning of the internet has always been meet people, meet them. I'll meet almost anyone who wants to meet me. Depending on how I feel, I may be like, yeah, meet me at the Stewart Shop in Leeds, New York. I'll see you there. It's right off exit 21 on the New York State Thruway. I'll look exactly like me. What do you look like? Meet people in person. Get together. The world that is evaporating fast will evaporate less quickly for you if you get together with people. Now, the reason Aries is so important in every chart, by the way, is that it is the place in every chart where we seek self-actualization. And that is crucial. I mean, and the concept of self is disappearing. The concept of self is in itself becoming irrelevant. But it is not irrelevant in truth, and for you find your actualization in the social realm. And so if you are trying to find your self-actualization in the virtual realm, you will be virtually self-actualized. You will not grow. You will grow if you get yourself into the 11th house. You've got to get out the door and down the street, or on the tram, or in your flying car, or your Tesla, or your old Subaru in my case, and get places where there's other human beings and meet them. Whatever they may be, formal events, structured events, informal events, bullshit events, completely non-existent events, like going to a convenience store and not being afraid to talk to anyone and everyone you feel moved to talk to. Your life needs to be a physically social environment for you to be able to grow. And this is all about. It's all about growing. All right, next thing. This conjunction is about a rapid, radical emergence of who we all are. This is a critical aspect. It is Eris conjunct Chiron. Now, I give a very good explication of this in the Aries reading and in the general introduction. You have both of those. So Eris is taken more than a little over a century to cross Aries out to about degree 25. Still got a ways to go to get into Taurus. I don't know exactly when that takes place. I should know that, but let's get a quick look at that. That I can do on this program. Let's see. Stations, positions. Eris. Sorry, you can't see me. Eris is in Taurus. Okay, ta-da. Eris enters Taurus in 2044. That's around the time that Saturn changes signs into Pisces. 2044, I'll be 80. So it's 2044 and 45, 46, 47, 48. So from 44 to 48, Eris is making its way into Taurus. So for the long foreseeable future, Eris is going to be in Aries. What is Eris in Aries? Eris in Aries is this trance we're all in. Now, people used to talk about this more, that when electronic media, people would be like, oh, television, put them in a trance. Well, the trance actually really begins with radio. Radio, as in commercially broadcast radio, really begins with Eris entering Aries. And then it progresses through, well, the telephone's like the warm-up act. It progresses from radio to television to high-definition television to the shitty internet to then Web 2, Web 3, Web 4. So it is about mass broadcast media. But more than that, it is about how we and society have all been transformed collectively by mass broadcast media. Ah, that's interesting. You have this going on in a collective house, the 11th house. That is where you relate to many different people. What's going on is now that Chiron is making a conjunction to Eris in the trance-inducing Eris, tribal trance-inducing Eris, and Chiron says, wake the fuck up. Now, that's Chiron's whole job, is to wake you the fuck up now. And it's be the distinct individual that you are now. Emerge from this comatose chrysalis of sleepwalking induced by all of this electronic mass media. Hitler hypnotized everyone. As Laurie Anderson said, Hitler was a drummer. Well, he was broadcast on the radio. FDR hypnotized everyone. He was broadcast on the radio. Fireside chats, kind of like I'm doing now. Gandhi, he was a product of the radio. He hypnotized anyone. I'm sure Mussolini was a product of radio. Simone de Beauvoir, founder of second wave feminism, a product of radio. Many of the things that we take for granted today, and the effect of which we don't really understand, came out of that initial radio era, then TV, then high-def TV, a whole other thing, then digital. This whole trance can be summed up as Eris in Aries. And now Chiron is here provoking individuation, provoking a return to individual inner awareness. It's freaking amazing that this is happening, but the problem is that people around you are unlikely to be waking up, in certainly not in the same way. By which I mean in a social context. They may be at a party and mumble something about the dinosaurs not existing or the whatever. They heard something about the COVID test, they go back to sleep. But you are waking up, and in particular, waking up in the context of your social reality, of the people that you know, you are leading the way. Okay, let's move on to the next scene. The next scene is similar, Pluto in Aquarius. Wow, that's exciting. So if you were Taurus, it's exciting because it's like the best place to have Pluto in Aquarius. If you were a Taurus, there would be a lot more responsibility involved. You may be Taurus rising, so you got the effect. But Pluto would be in your 10th place of responsibility, of interaction with the government in some way. But because it is in the 9th place, it manifests for you as a spiritual quality, a spiritual condition. Very interesting. And that's where it belongs. So Pluto is the unstoppable force. It is also the thing that affects and influences the millions. This is an old interpretation, but I'm the guy with all the old astrology books on my bookshelf over there, and most of the people you see on the internet haven't cracked the binding of an astrology book, except Rick Levine, who like read every single one of them, Melanie Reinhardt, who all my old friends have read them, but the young astrologers are like, well, maybe they read some like, you know, book about medieval astrology or something. When Pluto was first being figured out in the early 20th century, into the mid-20th century, it was understood to be about the millions. It affects mass consciousness. And in Aquarius, we have something affecting mass consciousness in a sign associated with inventions and with electricity. Electricity. And this is to say that you can orient and grow your, what you might call, spiritual dimension by tuning into this. And you may think, electricity is the last thing I care about. Who cares about electricity? Well, I don't know. If you saw Twin Peaks Season 3, the whole thing's about electricity, basically. The underlying theme of all 18 episodes of Twin Peaks Season 3 is electricity. Electrical outlets, electrical wires, transformation by exposure to electricity, etc., etc., etc. This is incredible. This is Lynch. This is really the genius of Lynch coming out, because it takes a lot. You have to have a lot of training to see this. I did not make this up overnight. I did not figure this out overnight. It has taken a full decade of studying the effects of media. And you have this where it is the most appropriate to have it, in a house associated with spiritual matters, but also that happens to land where Aquarius is, where it's also about some form of a group, Aquarius, spiritual, 9th, initiation, Pluto. Group, spiritual initiation. You are likely to be a leader of this. It would be in, among your social set. It would behoove you to really, really understand, like perk your ears up when I start talking, get your antennas going when I start talking about the effects of electricity, and I don't shut up. I give a talk for at least an hour on every Planet Waves FM, because this shit is important. Now, a couple of other things are going on. So you got that. And this is a social context, Aquarius. Social context, 11th. Social context, Uranus. Bah, this is a lot of emphasis. A lot of meaning coming through here. All right, next case. Last case. The 8th house is on a whole different wavelength. And no, there are a couple of astrologers who are aware of this. Somebody sent me, I'm so sorry to have to say this, someone sent me a video of someone attempting to interpret this Pholus Quaoar Ixion group in Capricorn. It was so bad, I couldn't even watch it. I tried, I got through maybe half of it. I'm like, oh God. It was an asphyxiated interpretation. There was no breath movement to it. It was not understanding the nature of these planets. So what's going on here is we are in a family crisis of epic proportions. And we get, the Family Hunger Games series included with your reading, Family Hunger Games Part 1, Part 2. This is the Family Hunger Games aspect. And by the way, while we're here, it relates to another point in Aries called Salacia. And this says that Let's draw that in here using the Brian Eno card as a ruler, which I shouldn't be doing, but what the heck? No, okay. This is about the way that your family, and in particular in-laws, the families of the people you've been married to and the families of the people that you have been involved with have influenced you, and it's been the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they have entered your life in ways that may have been very damaging or very beneficial, but there has been an influence. And you want to trace the influence of alcohol, you want to trace the influence of cruelty, and you want to trace the influence of the tribal myth, right? I'm Sicilian. My tribe, full blood. Tribal myth. The family came over from Sicily in the early 1900s, and this person didn't speak English, and this person never learned, and they were never naturalized, and not. I didn't exchange three words with my great-grandfather. I don't think he spoke English. My great-grandmother did. My grandparents did. My great-grandpa Mario, I don't even think he spoke English. He was never made an American citizen. This is the family mythology of Quaoar. Quaoar probably is the better pronunciation. Q-U-A-O-A-R, another planet out near where Borsisi is, which has a lot to do with what you believe. Check Aries for that. That's going to be in Aries. And when I get to Capricorn, I am going to emphasize the family Hunger Game reading of this group. And so you must be aware of the influence that has come in through the marriage partners of the people in your family, not just your personal in-laws, but the uncles and aunts through marriage, for example. And one of the most important places where the rubber hits the road, where the tires meet the highway, where the wheat is ground by the mill, is how you express your sexuality among your friends. And as part of your, I'm going to use the word imperative, but as an imperative of growth, it's very important that you learn to be honest about who you are as a sexual being. And when you get to that place where you feel guilty about what you're saying or what you've done or what you're thinking, that's the time to keep on going and not to retreat, because we're trained to retreat at the moment of honesty and not to at guilt and not to advance into and through the guilt. And this whole lineup contains a whole bunch of guilt, which you're working through in Scorpio. Also, that's another story. That is for the 2026 annual. And this is basically what I have to say to you in this, you know, context of a mid-year, now kind of getting into the end of the year reading. A lot going on, and I have, you know, left out dimensions, but I've tried to cover not only the main streets, but some of the interconnecting back streets. Okay, so I'll see you around the wheel at a different sign, in a different moment. Thank you. Please, if you're not already, be a Planet Wave subscriber. It's very important. It's the people are canceling subscriptions left, right, and center. This keeps me going between these readings, lets me be here ready and prepared to be able to do this level of work. I got to tell you, I didn't learn this in 5 minutes. The only way I learned this was like a ballet dancer taking class every single day. To be able to read a chart like that and to know what planets to put in, I got to do this 7 days a week. Yeah, I kind of take it easy on Saturday, but it's still a presence and a kind of a force of nature in my mind. In any event, thank you for your business, for your trust, for subscribing, for being a customer. Please share this reading with someone so they can get a sense of the work that I do. Send them to Planet Waves. I'm here to do this work for you and the people you love, for the benefit of you and the people you love. Please say hello to your cat, your dog, your horse, your goat, or especially your donkey. Lots of love. Bye for now.